in a day when you stood off on the side, a time when his warriors were taken away by strangers, when strangers came into his city and cast the lot for Jerusalem, was when you became one with them. That's Obadiah chapter 1, verse 11, the Ward Green version of 2003. And it's talking about, well, it's a prophecy with regard to Esau, as we've seen, but his brother was Jacob, as we saw mentioned in verse 10. And so Jerusalem, which was the city of Israel, also who was Jacob, that was the capital city of Israel, was Jerusalem, the main city of government, right? The seat of power was Jerusalem. And in a day when Esau stood off on the side, when Jacob's warriors were taken away by strangers, when strangers came into Jacob's city and cast the lot for Jerusalem, was when Esau became one with them. And he was not assisting his brother, right? That was the point. He did violence to his brother in verse 10 and stood off on the side in verse 11. He did not help his brother. And this is why the judgment is being given to the degree that it is here. We're going to read on, hopefully, in the coming days and complete this 21-verse chapter of Obadiah, the only chapter of the book of Obadiah. Little children, that's our study for today in the Bible. And in our article, The Ark of Urar to the Orient Express, we've reached part 2, chapter 11, paragraph 3. First of all, as a word of caution, I wrote, the articles which we cite and quote in our own are not chosen as though we approve of concepts contained within them, or concepts which are unscriptural. They are intended to be used only insofar as they may help strengthen Christian faith and bring joy to the Gentiles. We give this warning out of love for newly converted ones who need extra help from Jehovah and from his son, Jesus, in the days of Peleg, from Genesis 10:25, with the proviso of the book of Jubilees, chapter 8, verse 8, the earth was divided. The book of Jubilees, chapter 8, verses 8 and 9, if we may refer to that. And in the sixth year, given there as a year Anno Mundi, which has no relevance or bearing whatsoever on anything, we believe it's just a completely irrelevant chronology that's been attempted by certain people, possibly Jewish people, who wrote this, thereof, the sixth year thereof, in the sixth year thereof, that is, the sixth year of a certain Jubilee, which is the way the book of Jubilees is written, in Jubilees, as a chronology which is false, we believe, but she bare him, it says, in that sixth year, son. And he called his name Peleg. For in the days when he was born, the children of Noah began to divide the earth amongst themselves. For this reason, he called his name Peleg. Peleg means division. And they divided it secretly amongst themselves, verse 9. and told it to Noah. So then the interesting thing here is that it's only 2 years later, 1569, which is 2 years after the previous date given of 1567, neither of which dates we believe has any meaning. You can try and make meaning out of it, but these are not inspired books. We don't believe there's a lot of evidence that these books are written as fables, and the fact that they have chronology is just really a very sad attempt, I would say, by somebody to give a chronology to this, because if you try to make sense out of it, you get into all kinds of big trouble, you know. So that they divided the earth into three parts, it says, and this occurred only 2 years after the birth of Peleg, according to verses 8 and 10 there of Jubilees chapter 8. So that's what why we think that in the very early days of Peleg, the earth was divided, right? But we don't think the 2 years is necessarily accurate at all. But we also know that there are two divisions that occurred. One was caused by the scattering or the dispersion of the people that divided the people up into dispersed peoples at the Tower of Babel when the language was confused. But there's also this division of the land that was done in secret by the sons of Noah, according to the Book of Jubilees. Now, assuming the statement above is taken literally, there is ample reason already to believe that the birth of Peleg marked the beginning of important movements and divisions. The founding of Taoism by the Yellow Emperor is one such movement. The chronology being thus related, as Heber, in brackets the Yellow Emperor, is the father of Peleg. And we may thereby test the statement about the division of lands, i.e. its allotment among men, whether or not, as some have stated, the continents were split apart at the time, which seems a momentous event to warrant only one single phrase. So whether it's talking about the actual dividing of the continents through the continental drift, that is something that's known to have taken place at some point in time, and that originally the Earth was just one continent, and then it split into the different continents. That's something that's been a part of the study of the Earth's history, and we won't go into that, but the Yellow Emperor is Heber, we've identified, and he is the father of Peleg. So, therefore, we may test the statement about the division of lands among family heads, whether or not they be nearly similar. Right. It was not our work, but the work of Chinese scholars that gave the date of 2737 BCE for the end of the reign of Kainan, or rather Fuxi. Fuxi, as the Chinese are accustomed to call him. The word Xi being Chinese for emperor. Coincidentally with the current president of China being also called Xi, with a different intonation. In that case, it doesn't mean emperor because it's not pronounced the same. Pronunciation in Chinese is the way they determine the difference between the words' meanings, such as the word for emperor, Xi, which has an even pitch. Doesn't go up like the name of the current president of China in pitch. Pronounced as Xi with an even elevated pitch, and coming how miraculously near to the Sumerian flood hero's Greek name, Sesuthros, or She-Suthros, perhaps. This we mention in passing, for Gilgamesh in the epic is said to have sought and spoken with Sesuthros, or Sesithros. Anyone who has tried to build a piece of furniture, we may be quite certain, knows that nothing lines up by accident. At least not when you want it to line up, certainly, by accident. So the very alignment of the times of Peleg, born 2749 BCE, or I should say, it's not when you expect it to line up, and when you just trust in its, when you think everything's going to line up without your effort, and you don't have to do anything, and there's no, when you're not humble, and nothing does line up, does it? I mean, that's what people find. Everyone who tries to build a piece of furniture would know this, right? That you can, even sometimes when you're exerting yourself and praying constantly, you still can't get things to line up. But when things work out, in such cases, you know that you're living right. You know that Jehovah's with you. That's the difference. At the time I wrote this, I had not experienced as many of those times when Jehovah was with me and when things turned out exceedingly wonderfully for me, despite what I was not doing, which was not, I wasn't putting any effort into trying to get things to work out, but I was following the things that Jehovah was teaching me. And that's why he allowed these things to work out, because he can do it. He can make things line up. So it's not saying that these things will never line up. Certainly that's not what it's saying. It's saying something about relying on human wisdom and human power, which doesn't work. So the very alignment of the times of Peleg, born 2749 BCE, with Fu, Shi, rule end in 2737 BCE, which is only 12 years later, with the years counting backwards in the BCE period, and with Huang Di, the Yellow Emperor, ruling from 2699 BCE, are independent, strong proofs. These things line up, because Peleg lived much longer than 100 years, and he was born in 2749. 2699 is a mere 50 years after that in the BCE time period, counting backwards. Otherwise, we struggle with a situation akin to Ralph the husband saying to his wife Alice, "I'm the king, and you're nothing." She then replying, "So you're the king of nothing." She actually said, "Well, you know what that means, don't you, Ralph?" He said, "What?" She said, "You're the king of nothing." So, it's a story of, on the television series The Honeymooners, Ralph Cramden and his wife Alice. And when Alice attempts to believe something different than something that Ralph is telling her, even when she's quite correct, Ralph becomes, perhaps deservedly so, but he becomes obstinate, and he says, "I'm the king, Alice. You know, you're nothing, Alice. You're nothing. I'm the king, and you're nothing." That's what he's saying in the television show. The television show is probably, you can probably find that one even now on the YouTube channel somewhere, on one of the channels. So, obviously, in order to be a king, the king has to have subjects, right? So that's what that principle is there. But if we don't have any independent proof, in other words, different sources that end up giving us the same chronology in this case, which is absolutely impossible unless there's something. I mean, that's why I gave the furniture illustration, because it's impossible for things to accidentally line up in something like 3,000 years BC, you know, so long ago. They just don't line up if you've ever tried to. Even things that are much more recent don't line up if you've ever tried to build a case for something using dates that are aligned. It's extremely difficult to get alignment. So the fact that these things aligned were very strong proof. Well, was very strong proof, to be grammatically correct. It was a very, very, very it's an undeniable fact that they aligned, right? And that makes it it makes it significant, and it makes it convincing to anyone who's not had success with things that lined up. You know, if you've ever found that things didn't line up, this becomes important, the fact that they lined up. That's all that we're saying in this chapter, or paragraph, not the chapter, the paragraph. Yeah, there it is. The Honeymooners, the TV show with Jackie Gleason and Audrey Meadows, was the TV show there. But it's very disturbing if you read the Book of Jubilees and even the Book of Jasher to find out what it says about the chronology, because it's... But then when you read some of the other parts of those books, you see how fabulous they are, and how mythical and just full of amusing stories about what the history was, and yet they're not very clear about anything, and they're therefore not historical, and they're not inspired. That's the thing. That's why they're not included in the Bible. What did we say was included in the Bible by the Ethiopians? For the East Orthodox Church. Which is called the Orthodox Church? What is it called? Eastern Orthodox. Well, Psalm 151, right? Psalm 151, of course, is non-existent in the Protestant Bible. It only goes as high as 150 in Psalms. But 151 is canonical in the Eastern Orthodox Church. And there we go. There's something else there. They use the Book of Jubilees in their Bible canon also. As we also learned in paragraph 9 of chapter 10. But, yeah. Well, the Book of Jubilees, right? They call it the Book of Division. And in Hale's book, that's what I wanted to show you also, one more point that we talked about the other day, he says that the division took place, talking about the three families dividing up the land, Shem, Ham, and Japheth dividing the land. He says that division took place in the 140th year of Phaleg, who's also Peleg. We know that's the name for Peleg, as shown above there in the chapter heading there, at the page heading. Peleg or Phaleg, same person. But Phaleg, he dates that to 2614. So what do we get if we add 140 to that, say... That would be 2754, right? So right around the time when we're saying Peleg was born, right, which is 2749, 5 years different. So we don't disagree much on when Peleg was born, but there's a disagreement about this the time when the division occurred, unless the division occurred after the tower was built. And there's a problem with that, because let's go to the Book of Jubilees and see what we find here. What's Jubilees 11 say? Oh, yeah. That's talking about Ur-Kasdim. And they built the tower 43 years right here. Jubilees 10 and 21. And Peleg took a wife in Jubilees 10:18, which is in the 33rd Jubilee, in the first year of the second week. In other words, the eighth year, each week of years being 7 years. The eighth year of the 33rd Jubilee is when Peleg took a wife, according to Jubilees 10 and 18. And then they began to build the tower, according to the same chapter in verse 10, in the fourth week of that 33rd Jubilee. The fourth week would be the 22nd year, 3 weeks of seven being 21 years, the 22nd year of the 33rd Jubilee. But even, you know, there's possibly, how long was each Jubilee? That's the other question. I think if we go back to the beginning of Jubilees, I think we're going to find there's a problem with that as well. How long was each Jubilee, right? Because we know that Jubilees are, in the best, from the best authority, 50 years long, each Jubilee, whereas the some sources give 49 years as the length of a Jubilee. Okay, so we probably have to do, or we possibly have to do a search of that's chapter one. Oh, there. Yeah. Okay. I don't want to guess, because I have a memory of it, but I think it could be, I might make a mistake if I try and give my own memory of it. Okay. How long is the Jubilee in the Book of Jubilees? Forty-nine years. That's right, you see, whereas we have, from the best authority, 50 years as the length of a Jubilee. So even the length of a Jubilee differs. So we could never get an accurate chronology from it, because we don't agree with the length of the Jubilee itself. So there's that problem, and that's not at all the only problem. But let's talk about what a Jubilee is, right? A Jubilee was something that the Israelites celebrated as a cycle of release of slaves from bondage, and also the release of lands from their owners who had acquired the lands from their original rightful owners, and so the rightful owners regained their lands at the end of the Jubilee, and it was a time of release, a very important time of release, the Jubilee. It occurred every 50 years. And we've studied that. It's from the book of, I think it's from Leviticus. Let's look it up. Yes. Leviticus 25. The 50th year you must sanctify. It will become a Jubilee for you. See, so there are 50, according to the book of Leviticus 25 and 10. In fact, I'm trying to think, where is it now? is it the Jewish Encyclopedia? I think it was the Jewish Encyclopedia. If I look up Sabbaths and Jubilees, something like that. Let's see. Sabbatical, you know, Jubilees. Sabbaths. Right. Sabbatical year and Jubilee. There it is. Yeah. Yeah, and then it talks about the 50 and 49 year cycle. So let's bring that up as soon as I can. Open the browser again. There it is. So we're looking at the Book of Jubilees right now. Somewhere in here. The Jewish Encyclopedia. Under Sabbatical and Jubilee. If you look at the beginning. Now I can make the text bigger. That's true. But then I won't be able to read it. But I go to the top. Sabbatical year and Jubilee is the entry under the Jewish Encyclopedia, or in the Jewish Encyclopedia, I should say. Now let's look at the 50 and 49 year cycles, you see. There's a difference of opinion in the Talmud as to whether the Jubilee year was included in or excluded from the 49 years of the seven cycles. The majority of rabbis hold that the Jubilee year was an intercalation and followed the seventh sabbatical year, making two fallow years in succession. After both had passed, the next cycle began. They adduce this theory from the plain words of the law to, quote, hallow the 50th year, end quote. As we just, I believe, saw, sanctify the 50th year, Leviticus 25 and 10. And also from the assurance of God's promise of a yield in the sixth year sufficient for maintenance during the following 3 years until the ninth year, until her fruits come in, Leviticus 25 and 22, right here. And you must sow seed the eighth year, and you must eat from the old crop until the ninth year. Until the coming of its crop, you will eat the old. So, the best authority says, at least according to the Jewish rabbis, it's a 50-year jubilee, and that Book of Jubilees is 49-year jubilees, so it's already lost its authority and its ability to claim inspiration and so on. It's lost a lot of things, apparently. It loses its authority to claim inspiration from all the other things within it that are, they don't sound particularly inspired. Let's just see. Let's just look at it and see. This is Jubilees. That's Jubilees 1. Right. Where were we before? Jubilees 10. Right. And then there's another thing here. This one here. Oh, yeah. Which chapter was it where it talked about the building of the tower? Chapter 10, wasn't it? And 20? Yeah, 43 years they built it. Yeah, let's see what it says. Now, we should, I guess, admit that the Eastern Orthodox Church does allow that the Book of Jubilees belongs in the canon of the Bible, but it didn't make it. It wasn't accepted in the Protestant Bible. and we don't accept it because it doesn't agree with the Greek Septuagint version. In the chronology, I mean, well, it's a book of jubilees, and as we just said, the jubilee is the wrong length itself, but also it the whole chronology is short because it's trying to say that these things happened in the year, but with regard to, for example, the tower built beginning in the year 1645 Anno Mundi, which would be really a short chronology because in our chronology it's, you know, if the tower was built in our chronology sometime around, what date do we even have? We've never really been able to pinpoint when the tower was commenced, but it's sometime around, the dispersion was 2745, that's right. So if we take from that, if we subtract our date for the creation of Adam, subtract that, it's 2800 years Anno Mundi. It's not 1645 Anno Mundi. So the shortness of the chronology also rules it out, according to the Blessed Genealogy, certainly. Anyway, that we have to say it doesn't agree with our chronology. And we've got the date of the deluge. That's the other thing. That's the other point. Yeah, the other point would be the deluge date. I mean, we need to look at all these things at great length and over and over again. We can't stop researching. I'm not saying we have to stop researching. If we can somehow reconcile these things, that'd be good. But 537 years after the deluge, right? The deluge in their chronology. When is the deluge in their chronology? Isn't it? I thought it was 1656 in the standard chronology. So they're saying this happens before the deluge? That can't be right, right? 1645. So I don't know what chronology they're giving or what date they're giving to the deluge. But, I mean, that's the problem. We come up with all kinds of problems. I know that I tried to believe this, I tried to understand it as being true, and it just doesn't fit. It doesn't fit. That's before I came up with the genealogy, though. The genealogy solved a lot of problems that couldn't be solved using these existing sources. And that's it for today's study, January 2nd, 2025, of the Common Era. Did I say that wrong yesterday at the end? Maybe I did. The time is 1645 hours Canadian Eastern Time, and I love you very much. It's thank you very much. It's Sissy and Star saying bye for now, and thank you so much for listening and watching. Today we had the pleasure and the trial of studying the Ark of Urartu, the Orient Express, Chapter 11, Paragraph 3.